Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Monday, November 17th, 2008, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
Hello, Rick.
Hello, darling. For all you others out there who don't know me, I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. I have a really remarkable show in store for you. Today, I have yet another installment in my new series of interviews called The Erotic Mind. Through this series of conversations with noted erotic artists, we are trying to uncover something of the creative process involved in this specialized art form. And now that we have had several such interviews, some very interesting similarities are beginning to develop. Have you noticed? Well, today I have the distinct pleasure of introducing you to a spectacular artist with a big, fat, uncut, international reputation. My guest is the oh-so-handsome Michael Bryant. I'm one of his biggest fans. I've admired his lusty, homoerotic images for years, and nowadays they seem to pop up everywhere on the internet, which pretty much makes my day, don't you know? Be sure to check out Michael's delicious artwork as well as his insightful and informative blog on his site, studio1088.com. While on his site, you can purchase his original artwork or copies. Hell, there's even a 2009 calendar featuring Michael's images. I know what I'm asking Santa for this year. No collector of erotic art should be without a Bryant or two. That is, if you ask me.
Ricky, you're becoming quite human. I suppose we have to thank you for that, mademoiselle.
Yeah, you can thank that mademoiselle for making me so damn human. Today's podcast sponsor is Ropex. Hey guys, are you tired of dribbling when all you really want to do is shoot? Do you think you need more spunk in your spooge? Well, I have just the thing for you. The good folks at New Generation Labs bring us Ropex, the original Swedish ropes formula. Say what? You heard me. Ropex is the natural way to increase semen volume, so that when you bust your nut, you'll have some nice ropey pearl jam spewing out of your willy. Ropex was developed in Sweden in the mid-1960s. It's a unique blend of pharmaceutical-grade botanicals designed to improve prostate function, which is, of course, the key to heightening sexual pleasure. But you know that already, huh? Listen, don't be misled by the outrageous claims of all those other bogus products out there. Ropex is not a cure-all, mind you, nor does it claim to be, but it does what it says it will. Still not convinced? Okay, check out my product review page at the top of drdicksexadvice.com. Scroll down till you find review 21. There you'll see that I've used Ropex myself. And like all of my reviews, I give you my unvarnished opinion. So if you're looking for a little help in the jizz production department, visit the Ropex website today. Look for their swell banner in the sidebar of my site. Okay, on with the show. Welcome, Michael, and thank you so much for joining us. I'm thrilled that we could make this time to be together. I've been a big fan of yours for a very long time. Would you like to say hello to the nice people?
Hi, nice people. I'm very thrilled to be here.
And they are really nice people. I've been spending way too much time on your site, studio1088.com. I believe I'm single-handedly burning up all of your bandwidth. It's just that it's so much to see and read, including your very own blog. You clearly love your work. You do, don't you?
Yes, I do. I left a job that I didn't love in order to do this, so yeah, I enjoy it.
Excellent.
I hope you enjoy it as much as
we enjoy your work.
Good. No, it's great anytime anybody can do something they enjoy for a living, because then it doesn't really seem like work at all.
Uh-huh. Before we get to discussing erotic art in general and your work in particular, let's talk about you. Can you give us a brief bio?
Sure. I was born and raised in upstate New York, way upstate, near Canada, kind of farmland area. The shy kid, mm-hmm. graduated high school, got a job for the post office for a while, and in 97 I moved to Massachusetts, and by 2003 I quit the post office to do my art full time.
Wow. So how did you get your start as an artist?
Well, I always liked to draw, and that's something I kind of stuck with. Most kids draw when they're little, so I don't ever really remember a time when I didn't. It's just something that I kept with throughout the years, where I think other kids go on to bigger and better things, or just different things.
I think you're right there. I mean, I know that I drew and doodled, probably more to the point, when I was a kid, but I didn't. I mean, I guess I didn't have any talent, or I didn't notice that other people
maybe
were saying.
Maybe nobody encouraged you.
Well, that's probably true. So, did people encourage you, and were you able to show, you know, other people the stuff that you were doing, and they were saying good for you?
To some extent, I think like in the slower grades, it's like they always tell you you're doing a job or whatever. But I think as I got older, I did it more on my own, so probably more ahead of the people in my like high school art class.
Right.
So I got attention that way.
Uh-huh.
And you know, that's always nice to get attention.
Yes, most assuredly. Yeah, especially, you know, if it's true talent. And were there people in your life who encouraged you and suggested that, you know, this is something that you ought to pursue in one fashion or another?
Well, Not really. I mean, in a sense, would say, oh, you're really good. You should be an artist. That's about as far as it ever went, and that always left me like, oh, I am an artist. I mean, what do I do? And nobody ever really kind of guided me in a direction, and I never really understood what it would be to be an artist. You know, there's like the commercial sense, and over the years kind of learned that I don't like being told what to do.
Uh-huh. So you never had any formal training? I mean, you didn't go to art school or other
no.
than... Isn't that amazing? That's amazing.
Yeah, I suppose. Well, maybe my career would be 20 years advanced by now if I had, though.
It could have easily stamped out, you know, your natural capacities, too. You know how schools do that kind
possibility.
Of thing.
Yeah, I've actually, you know, read some things about art school and some people kind of dissing the whole process and that it kind of tries to put you in a channel and send you in a direction.
That's right.
And let you just go on way, and which was my path. I mean, I just did what I wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. When did you begin to create erotic art?
Probably around the time I moved away from upstate New York. I never really, you know, I mean, at that point, I mean, I was 30-ish, and I wasn't out to my parents even at that point, and I was just in a situation where I kind of needed to get away from that environment if I was going to be happy.
Uh-huh.
And so I had met someone online, and we moved to Massachusetts at the same time, and it just seemed that I was finally in an atmosphere where I could be myself, and then sort of that kind of started coming out in my artwork, where I was able to draw what I've kind of always wanted to draw.
Uh-huh. Because you had a sense of freedom because you were on your own.
Yeah, yeah, and I wasn't like... Because beforehand, like in high school and such, I would kind of gravitate to do male figures, but it was always in a more... like science fiction or a fantasy kind of a setting.
Right.
Thing really cool. I mean, I like doing the male physique, but it was always accompanied by, you know, a busty woman as well.
Nice beard.
Yeah.
I love it. Where do you find your models?
I don't really use models in the sense, you know, you like an actual person. I kind of compose my own model. Sounds kind of freaky, but
on the contrary, you vivid imagination then for sure.
It's part imagination and it's part like I'll put together a figure from various photos. Just things from a catalog, a magazine, internet and stuff, and it's kind of a combination. And it's like one figure is probably 8 different people.
I see. Yeah.
And I just kind of use things as I give me that realistic look without, you know, it's actually anything that exists.
Right.
It goes back to my fantasy type of art, you know, like science fiction art. It's things that don't exist, but it's based on real stuff.
Right. I did notice, however, that you are one of your own models. Hot, hot, hot. I think I am in love, honey.
Oh, blush.
Oh, dear. I mean, I think that's absolutely wonderful. I mean, I just, like, holy cow. That's amazing. I mean, you can look in the mirror and create a fantasy for lots of other people. I think that's, my hat is off to you. Defining erotic art is difficult since perceptions of both what is erotic and what is art fluctuate with time and by culture. For example, the depiction of a phallus in some cultures is not erotic at all, but rather a common symbol of potency and fertility. Is that your perception as well?
Well, yeah, to some extent. I mean, I'm sure that the phallus can be erotic in all cultures, and just some cultures are more comfortable with sexuality than others.
Uh-huh. Good point.
I think it's kind of part of in context or, you know, kind of just a cultural tradition, whether it's just seen as erotic or can be seen as, you know, clinical or generic or, you know.
Yes, I think it has a lot to do with, you know, how sex positive a culture is. And, you know, and it seems to me, in my thoughts about this, that cultures that are closer to nature, pre-industrial cultures, they tend to have a much more positive appreciation of the whole concept of fertility and, you know, penises and vaginas just kind of go right along with that.
Right. I think, religion plays a factor, and I think of, you know, like you mentioned, kind of more native cultures have a more natural kind of religious beliefs, where, you know, more modern cultures and religion is much more stricter and, you know, less kind of organic.
Right. But at the same time, I mean, we have minarets and we have obelisks and steeples. All of them are, you know, just a penis.
Don't tell anybody.
Oh, right. Oops. I mean, my God is more bigger than your God kind of thing. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, it's a strange thing about humankind and religion and sexuality.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, bizarre. It seems to me like in Western civilization, the church or organized religion played a great part in erotic art unbeknownst to them. I mean, it wasn't, you know, that they were promoting erotic art, but it was a lot of eroticism in art depicting like biblical scenes and whatnot.
Right, correct. I mean, yeah, it's like, it makes you wonder, is like, have things, just our interpretation of the church changed? Mm-hmm. Maybe it was more open, at least to nudity and such before.
Right. Yeah. There's a distinction that is often made between erotic art and pornography. Both depict the body, sensuality, sexuality, even lovemaking, etc. But there is a fundamental difference between the two forms of expression. Would you agree with that?
Definitely there's differences. I mean, sometimes they can be subtle, and a lot of it's in the eye of the beholder type of thing. But I think, like, erotic art or anything that's considered more erotic is it taps into something inside people, and it goes beyond generating just a physical arousal. It's like it's a more emotional connection.
Yeah, interesting. I noticed with a great big smile that one of the humorous quotes on your site is from a former porn star, Gloria Leonard. And she says that the difference between pornography and erotica is lighting. That is so true. Holy cow. Other people say that, you know, if it's done in black and white, it's art. And if it's done in color.
Right. Yeah. It's very bizarre to find what the line is, and I guess people have their own. Uh-huh. But I think like the reference of the difference between lighting for pornography and erotica, it kind of has to do with like setting the mood and making that tap into something more emotional than just uh-huh. something clinical.
Yeah.
Writers who write erotica. They don't just write down step by step what happens in a
right.
clinical sense.
Right.
They're using words that tap into people's emotions and sets up kind of feelings in their psyche and connections.
Right.
Using sultry and words like that uh-huh. other than just like penis and
Right. Right. Which is an interesting kind of thing because, you know, as I'm interviewing erotic artists who are authors, they can get away with a great deal. Their depictions of sexual situations can be extraordinarily precise and just sexually charged. I don't feel like graphic artists could get away with that and still remain in erotica as opposed to pornography. Would you agree with that?
I think so. I mean, it's really hard to say because I think in a way, the written is more personal.
Uh-huh.
You can look at it, by yourself in your own head. You're
uh-huh.
you're not necessarily sharing it with everybody as visually,
right.
An image would, where you can just hold it up and
yeah.
shock people with it.
Yeah.
Where there's no denying everybody seeing the same thing.
Right.
Something that's written, it's you read it. You have to read it. You have to sit there and get in touch with the words.
Uh-huh.
With something visual, it's like it's there and it's in your face. And I think maybe that maybe crosses the line for some people, calling it more pornographic.
Yeah, that's it is a funny kind of thing because words are as powerful to my mind as images are. But you're right. I mean, when one is confronted with an image, there, is no really getting around it. Where if you just see a bunch of words on a piece of paper, they don't really assemble until one really involves oneself with the writing.
Yeah, you have to make the commitment to it.
Yeah, to read it, to connect the words on the page. Interesting.
Right.
Maybe this is a good place for us to talk about your personal take on erotica. As we've already discovered, there are several plausible definitions floating around. But I'd like to get your specific take on what erotic art means to you.
That's always a difficult thing to describe.
Uh-huh. You know it when you see it kind of thing.
Yeah, it's kind of that. It's kind of, and again, it's the eye of the beholder, too. Is like
uh-huh.
some things I do, I don't particularly find that it's really erotic or provocative in that sense.
Uh-huh.
But some people, I'll hear comments on a certain piece that is like, there's not even hardly any nudity showing, and
uh-huh.
I get comments that they find it, either too erotic or
uh-huh.
too provocative or
uh-huh.
inappropriate in some kind of situation. So I don't really understand the whole thing. I mean, for me, I don't find anything wrong with certain images that
mm-hmm.
others would find objectionable.
Yeah.
Or call erotica.
Yeah.
So
It's interesting because as a therapist, I see a vast array of people with different ideas about sexuality, and some people think that, you know, having sex with the light on is very daring. And others, you know, it's just like, well, you know, that doesn't
it's
even
just
come
for fun.
Close. Exactly. So it is, as you suggest, I think, in the mind of the beholder. I also think that it may have something to do with where each of us is at a particular given time. I mean, if we're looking for arousal, something might be, you know, very arousing to us if we're out in pursuit of that arousal, where if, you know, we're not particularly filled with desire at the moment, you know, we could easily pass over an image and it, you know, it just wouldn't hold the same allure.
Right, right, yeah. Maybe erotica is in the eye of the horny beholder.
Good point. Or the repressed, you know. I mean, if somebody is sexually repressed, then, you know, the a casual image would hold, you know, a great sexual charge as opposed to somebody who is not so sexually repressed.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, maybe that's why some things I don't consider really that erotic is maybe because of I'm overexposed
yeah.
to
well,
it.
Desensitized, for sure. I think that there's something to be said about that. Absolutely. And I feel the same way. I mean, I see, you know, genitalia all day long. And, you know, I mean, it. And some of it is erotically charged for me, and most of it is not. I mean, I don't have a traditional response, physiological response, as other people who don't see the same kind of imagery that I see all the time. So
right.
It's very curious. Good. What makes erotic art different from other artistic work that you do? I assume that you are doing other art. Are you not?
Well, actually, pretty much everything that I do usually ends up on my website.
Uh-huh.
As far as, like, what's erotic and what's not, I mean, that's, again, you know, it's up to the person that's
uh-huh.
viewing it.
Right.
To me, I think a lot of my work really doesn't, I wouldn't qualify as necessarily erotic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, more of it's just artwork that's based on my point of view, which is as a gay man.
Uh-huh.
So it's like celebrates the beauty of men and
uh-huh.
their lives and loves and stuff. But granted, I do try to always infuse some kind of a hint of sexuality in a
uh-huh.
piece, even if it's not a particularly sexual piece.
Uh-huh.
You know, the main figure might just be shirtless or in a certain kind of pose or have a certain
uh-huh.
expression on his face.
Mm-hmm. That come hither stare.
yeah. Where it definitely kind of is playing on that kind of
uh-huh.
Sexual emotion connection, and so as far as the differentiating between what I consider my erotic stuff and what's not, I mean, it's kind of it's like black and white, and then this whole big gray area in between
right.
that, you know, things just fall somewhere in the spectrum.
So you're not producing art like flowers and puppy dogs and, you know, landscapes?
Oh, God, no. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Right, exactly.
That's just not me. I mean, a woman I worked with years ago mentioned, she made a comment to me about, you know, I'm so talented, but why do I choose that as my
yeah.
subject matter?
Right.
I was like, well, that's me. I mean,
yeah.
I can appreciate, you know, a beautiful valley and tall, shining skyscraper or
mm-hmm.
something to appreciate, but it's just not what I'm, you know, passionate about to create.
Exactly. Do you feel, like, compelled to create erotic art, or is, you know, this is, I mean, it's your life work, we know that, but would you be lost if you couldn't?
Probably. I mean, I don't do it just for a job.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I didn't start out doing it as a job. I mean, I just started, you know, wanting to do it. You know, once I kind of felt the freedom that I could, you know, draw and paint whatever I wanted, I just did that, and I didn't set out to make this my career. It just kind of evolved that way.
So the passion began before the success, yes?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I had started doing like male nudes, kind of fairly simple. Some of them were just black and whites, and then at one point I just created a website and put some pieces up, and you know, people started finding it, and I thought, oh, what the heck, let me put some up on eBay or something, and people started buying them, and then you know, just things kept evolving from there.
Yeah, right. Do you think erotic artists are wired different than other mere mortals? Are you wired differently than other people?
But of course.
So there you have it.
You mortal. God. I think as artists in general, we're probably different in that we're more observers of society rather than participants, in a sense.
Interesting.
And, you know, artists are all varied, so our work can either reflect the bad stuff or celebrate the good stuff. And I think erotic artists, because of their own experiences or whatever, for whatever reason, gravitate toward society's sexuality as what they choose to to express on canvas or paper or what have you. I don't think we're that different.
Yeah, well, you know, I think there is something about how artists see the world, and that's what the great impetus behind doing this particular series of interviews with people like yourself is trying to get to the erotic mind. What is the erotic mind as opposed to, you know, everyone else? And I look at erotic artists with great awe. I mean, I think I contribute what I can to the field of human sexuality, but I cannot, for the life of me, create erotic art in any way, shape, or form, which is a very interesting kind of thing. So I'm in awe, basically.
Well, thank you. I don't, you know, like, I think it's like I said, it's a matter of observing, and I think as it's just an artistic eye, and for us, I mean, as erotic artists, that's our kind of our field. So
yes.
Maybe we're more attuned to that and more adept at observing that, and then taking it in, and you know, being able to
Well, you process what you observe differently. I think I'm a terrific observer of human behavior, as you must be, and all the other people that I've interviewed so far are real good observers. But your expression of what you see and how you interpret what you see is completely different than mine. I mean, mine is much more clinical. I use a lot of words in expressing what I see, but it might be artful, but it isn't art. That's for sure. Because I know the difference, I think.
Right. I don't know. I mean, as with like anything artistic, in a sense, it's like if like somebody sees a white building sitting on a hill, and it's like, well, to maybe the non-artistic person, that they would just if they were attempting to create it, would just get out white paint and put down a white building on a hill.
Yes.
Maybe as an artist, though, you look a little bit further and you see that it's not just white. It's, you know, there's all kinds of colors that are going into making it white.
Exactly.
So maybe the same sense erotically, there's it's not just, you know, a naked man or woman or whatever. There's the way light plays on it and the positioning and everything that goes into it, that makes it more artistic, I guess.
Yes. Well, you know, because again, the comparison between my work, for example, and an erotic artist who is writing erotica, I mean, I'm using a lot of the same words, cock and pussy, and you know, fucking, and all that kind of stuff that they are. They're just right. assembling those words on a page considerably differently than I am. In the
it's
same
it's
way,
a choice of adjectives, I think, that makes the difference.
Perhaps, but you know, I mean, I'm appreciative of, you know, the visual arts as well, especially your work, because I like it so much. I mean, it's realistic and it engages me. It pulls me in. It tells me a story. A good portion of the work that you do is really telling stories, is it not?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I definitely try to put more in than just you know, a beautiful body. I mean, maybe
although
initially
that would carry
when
the day, don't you know?
Well, yeah. Well, initially, I mean, that's kind of like I was captivated by the male form, and I wanted to create that. But I think as I've evolved as an artist, there's more. I've tapped more into the emotional side of it,
right.
and want to tell stories and
right.
and put more out there than just, you know.
But even depicting a male image, for example, I mean, you have to put that male image, well, you don't have to, I suppose, but one would put that image in a context. I mean, is he lying down? Is he lying down in the grass? Is he lying down in a bed? Is he
right.
standing up? I mean, does he have clothes on? And
right.
are the clothes coming off or are the clothes going on? Is he dressing or undressing? All of those kinds of things. I mean, so... even, you know, a stripped down, pardon the pun, image is telling a story that, you know, unless it's just, you know, a sketch of, you know, a nude.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, even in that sense, I mean, just a sketch of a nude can convey. I mean,
exactly.
it depends what's emphasized
uh-huh.
and what's not.
Right.
It kind of is. Yeah, I mean, you're kind of manipulating the viewer in a sense, I guess,
exactly.
into what to focus toward and,
yes.
and put questions in their mind and let their mind kind of take it in and play with it.
Well, that to my mind is what an artist does. It manipulates an artist manipulates his or her audience to feel, experience something that the artist is also experiencing.
Yeah, definitely. And when I'm working on a piece, I actually get engrossed in it. I feel involved in the piece. I kind of try to put myself in the situation and get a sense of everything that's in it.
Uh-huh.
Like if it's a guy out in the rain, I'm imagining the rain, you know, what it feels like,
yes.
and the
right.
temperature of it, and,
yes.
and the air, and,
yes.
and everything, the sound of footsteps, and everything. It's strange to say I'm trying to put in the sound of footsteps into just a visual work of art, but it's all part of being in the situation that I'm creating, and hopefully that comes through and transfers to the viewer.
And it creates a sense of reality too. I mean, it's perhaps your audience is not necessarily hearing the footsteps, but they certainly are experiencing something bigger than the sum of its parts.
Right. I hope so.
Good. Oh my goodness, the time is holy cow! I have so many more questions. Can I invite you back for next week?
Oh, certainly.
Oh, thank you
this
so much.
Fun.
Thank you so much. Well, until next week then, Michael, be well, and we'll be hearing more from you.
Okay, great.
Ilsa, I don't wish to be the one to say it, but it's late.
Boy, you can say that again. Look at the time. Holy cow. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad you could join me. Tune in next week for part two of my conversation with Michael Brayat and more Sex Advice with an Edge. With your host, me, Dr. Dick. And in the meantime, be sure to visit Michael's site at studio1088.com. And don't forget to tell him Dr. Dick sent you. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Ropex. I know a lot of you guys get it in your head that the amount of cum you produce and the velocity of your money shot are somehow associated with virility.
Well, I don't buy that logic necessarily, but who among us doesn't like a nice puddle of dickwad to play with and admire? Ropex can help you boost the volume of your ejaculate and thus increase your orgasmic contractions. I am happy to recommend Ropex to anyone who worries about puny spunk production. Again, I invite you to check out my review of Ropex on the product review page of DrDickSexAdvice.com. Look for review number 21. And here's a tip. The makers of this fine product, New Generation Labs, offers a special. Order two, get one for free. They also have a convenient auto-billing, auto-shipping option available, which includes an additional 10% discount. This is the ideal solution for those who want a regular supply of their products sent to them without the bother of going online to reorder every time. Why, you can't beat that with a stick. Be sure to look for Dr. Dick's podcast on iTunes. Once in the podcast section, all you have to do is search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe. And hey, feel free to leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.